Hi, I'm Morgan.
I'm Odette.
And I'm Madeline.
And we love Christian fiction.
We love it so much that we wanted to talk about it on a podcast.
Each episode, we will read classics of the genre or new releases.
And discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly. So come join us.
Hello, listeners.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
We're back for another episode of Redeeming Lit Podcast.
Here we are.
Here we are, reading another book. Well, no, we read another book, and we're here to discuss. I always say that as in a thing that we're going to do when we've already read the book each time.
Yes. But probably all of us are also in the middle of
reading other books.
Oh, absolutely.
Of course. We're not monsters.
Can't stop, won't stop.
No, never. Honestly, it's how I read 40 books, whatever it was last year.
Yeah, you killed it last year with your reading numbers. That was amazing. I would call that an aggressive reader. Not just a voracious reader, an aggressive
reader. It's actually
That is a good description.
It's actually a real good description type reading that I do.
Yes.
So, when we were planning season 3, and we've talked about this already on other episodes, our theme was a little bit different than season 2. While we discussed, if you're interested in our thoughts on season 2, we did release that recap episode in December, but we decided we were going a different route for season 3.
Yes.
And really, it was simply, I think we were in an in-group text and one of us said, I just want to read books and be happy. And so that is the theme.
That is our theme. Season 3, read books and be happy.
So
here we are, friends.
So we're reading books that make us happy, and we hope they make you happy too.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
And Madeline, I feel like you should tell the listeners what book we read.
Oh my goodness. You knew this one was coming. You guys knew if I had anything to say about it, we would be reading another Laura France book on the podcast. And so here we are. We read The Seamstress of Acadie, which just came out in January. So it's hot off the press, and I cannot wait to talk about this book.
Oh my goodness. Before we do that, housekeeping. Yes. As with last season, there will be snacking, and we make no apologies.
No.
We're the snackish type, so.
Absolutely.
It is what it is, and you might hear trains, planes, or automobiles, because we're at my apartment, and I'm close to all those things sometimes. So
this isn't a professional studio, people.
Yeah, one day we'll get there.
This is just Odette's house.
Yes, it's true.
Just Odette's house.
I love that.
That's true.
Okay, so also I feel like whenever we start season, the first couple episodes, my brain's like, "What is our order?
Yeah. What are we doing?"
So Madeline, we did talk about this before, but would you like to read the back cover copy?
I do want that.
I thought you would.
I'm going to read the top line because...
Yes! You know that's important to me. It's intentional.
We have to do it now that we've made a big deal of it. So that's true. Okay. In a land torn apart by conflict, can love mend the tattered pieces? It's a good line. As 1754 is drawing to a close, tensions between the French and the British on Canada's Acadian shore are reaching a fever pitch. Seamstress Sylvie Gallant is how I pronounced it in my head.
Mm-hmm. That's why I pronounced it.
Okay. And her family, French-speaking Acadians, wishing to remain neutral, are caught in the middle, their land positioned between two forts flying rival flags. Amid preparations for the celebration of Noel, the talk is of unrest, coming war, and William Blackburn, the British Army Ranger raising havoc across North America's borderlands. As summer takes hold in 1755 and British ships appear on the horizon, Sylvie encounters Blackburn, who warns her of the coming invasion. Rather than participate in the forced removal of the Acadians from their land, he resigns his commission. But that cannot save Sylvie or her kin. Relocated on a ramshackle ship to Virginia, Sylvie struggles to pick up the pieces of her life. When her path crosses once more with Williams, they must work through the complex tangle of their shared, shattered past to navigate the present and forge an enduring future.
Wow.
There it is.
Mm-hmm. I'm here for it.
Wow. So I listened to this book, but the audiobook is not out yet.
Mm-hmm.
How did I listen to it?
When we're recording this.
I'm wondering.
Correct.
How did you listen to this?
Yes.
Oh, please.
Honestly, when it comes out, well, the audiobook will be out, but it'll like just released, basically.
Oh, okay.
So because I was struggling for one reason or another with reading it. Like with my eyeballs.
Right.
So Well, because audiobooks is reading, but like, I need to be able to just listen to this so I can actually make a dent in it, because I was just struggling. But, so I was like, how could I do this? And I found out you can have, I don't have an Alexa or Google Home or anything like that, but if you download the Alexa app on your phone, it will read, and you have a book in your Kindle, it will read your Kindle books to you.
In the Alexa voice, or can you choose what type of voice?
It, that seems more high tech than I even knew what to ask for. Okay. So I couldn't find a way, I just used, I guess, the Alexa voice. I don't know what the Alexa voice sounds like.
She's like a it's like a female voice.
It was a female voice. It sound,
it's
me.
Similar, but not, but different from Siri.
Right, that was the vibe. Anyways, so.
I love that.
So I was listening to it. I couldn't speed it up. I couldn't figure out how to speed it up on the app, which was kind of annoying because it was a little bit slower than I would normally listen to audiobooks. But the thing that was mostly annoying about it was because she kept mispronouncing things. And I was like, that's not how you say fichu, Alexa. Like, that's not how you say it.
Would she respond to you?
No, I didn't. I first of all, I disabled voice commands because everything's watching you all the time. I was like, don't talk back to me. I don't want to hear it.
See, I would have said, go faster or read faster, Alexa.
Well, that is technically what you can do. That was the only, but I was unwilling to compromise my, I did not want to communicate with the machine in that way. Unwilling to do that. So I was trying to find a different way to do it and I couldn't.
Fair, fair.
So instead, she just yelled at her phone, that's not how you pronounce fichu!
Exactly.
What is fichu for those who didn't study French? Or...
A fichu is like a little...
covering?
Right? Like that you put... Oh, I thought it was like a collar thing. Oh, it is a covering. You're right.
But it covers the shoulders. Over shoulders.
And like, yeah. And, but it kind of like goes up on the neck
it's
too,
probably
it?
Like... It's probably like... square mm-hmm. shape, like a large square that can be folded. Yes. And you kind of like tuck it in... Yes. Under this piece that, what's this piece called? That pins,
the bodice?
That pins to the...
Oh.
A petticoat?
Stomacher?
No.
Stomacher.
No. Stomacher.
It, like, can tie it up under there to, like, a modesty piece.
Yes.
Covers the shoulders.
Yes.
Keeps the shoulder protected. From the
but it is,
but
like,
it can come up
larger,
neck,
but it can come up high, and it kind of covers
the décolleté. The
décolleté,
yes.
Anyways, the point is, there were multiple things that, and they kept pronouncing, because this is seamstress of a Katie, correct?
Right.
That's
exactly.
Correct?
Yes.
Alexa pronounced it Acadie.
They talk about that
a lot.
So would she say the Acadians?
She said Acadians. Mm. She did say Acadians,
but she said,
wanting to go back to Acadie.
Is that how it says she sounded?
Yeah.
I never could have gotten her more than
I was
sentence.
Desperate. I was desperate, Odette.
Honestly,
I'm
if
just
that
saying,
ever happens again, you just call me and I'll read it to you out loud.
Just literally, I would just read it to you. Like, over the phone.
I'm sure that would have been better. But the point was,
you can just
I was
be on
like,
forever call.
I was like, oh, Lord. It was not the best of reading experiences because of that, but I needed to be able to make a dent in it. So that's
sure.
I did it because I needed to read the book. But I'm sure this, so I'm not plugging that by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure.
I would say, if you could, wait for the audio to come out. That's
there's a reason why people are hired to.
Professionally narrated. I listened to the audiobook of Rose and the Thistle, and
that was
the narrator is the same one.
It was fabulous.
That was so good. It was flawless and beautiful. Highly recommend that audiobook, and probably the professionally narrated one of Seamstress of Acadie, will be fabulous as well.
Can I commend you for one thing, Morgan, your ingenuity? One thing I appreciate about you is your responsibility kicked in and you were like, I don't care. However, this has to be read.
Whatever
I don't care
takes.
If this is...
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
That's, I mean, that's...
Whatever it takes.
That's real.
Much to my chagrin, that responsibility kicks in every time and I'm like, ugh, we're doing this.
This. It was not an unpleasant book to read. That was just an unpleasant way to take it in, but...
Yeah. In the future, though, I would absolutely, like... read the book out loud to you via phone.
I literally just listen to it like all day. Like I turn it on in the morning and just, you don't have that kind of time. No one did except for Alexa. So I put my head
Alexa.
But I also could read faster than Alexa.
That's for sure.
And you don't have to feel as intimidated.
And she doesn't have to tell me information. Acadie. Acadie. Sylvie Gallant. Sylvie Gallant of Acadie. It's terrible. It was really, really.
I'm like,
it was tragic.
Listeners, I'm literally crying, like laughing so hard that I'm crying.
I'm also just picturing Morgan living her life, like with your three children screaming, living their lives.
Making breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Listening to Alexa read
with her three sons of Akkadee.
Sylvie of Akkadee.
What do you, I feel like, Madeline, you could do an impression of Alexa's voice.
I feel like Morgan just did a great impression of Alexa's voice.
That's exactly how she said it, Katie. I listened to it a lot of times. I got it spot on.
It's pretty good by now. It's
pretty good. Anywho. Okay,
people.
So, star ratings.
Oh my gosh, yes. It's time.
It is time. It's that time. So, who wants to go first?
I will, actually. Okay. I'll go first with my star rating.
I love this. I love that you're taking initiative and going for it this season.
Thank you.
So good.
Okay, so I gave this book.
She just looked at us as if we're supposed to know.
Well, you see, I took initiative, but I hadn't thought of my star rating until I started speaking. So I was still trying to go with it. I think I'm going to go with 4.25. Okay.
Okay.
It might be a 4.5. I don't know, 4.25, 4.5, in there. I'm going to, let's say 4.25 for now. Okay. That's my gut. It's not my most favorite book that I've read by Laura. However, it did have a lot of things that I was expecting, a lot of things that I love from her books. Of course, the writing style is it fits me like a glove. It's perfect for me, so I love the writing style. I know that picking up a book that's written by Laura France, I know I'm gonna like it because I love the way that she writes books. So that's check, perfect. The setting, I loved the setting in the beginning. The second half of the book, I was like, oh, I just wish we were back in Akkadee, which of course you can't be because of the nature of the story. But the setting was so beautiful. And I feel like she kind of, towards the end, especially like those last couple of scenes or those last few chapters when she's like describing like her home coming back to Ravana or Ravano, however she's pronouncing it. I was like, oh, there's some of that idyllic description again in there. I think she's so good at that. But I wanted more of that. But I mean, the characters I loved. The romance was like very tender and sweet. It didn't feel like a passionate romance to me or like a super swoony one, but it was very tender and very sweet. I loved it. And I loved all the side characters. I loved Blue.
Oh, yes.
We're going to talk about him a lot. Eve. Oh, my gosh. I loved Eve.
Mm-hmm. She was lovely.
There was some side characters that I was like, I want a whole book on this person. I love when a book does that. Yes. I love that.
Yes. So that's our plug. So our, you know, friends, what? We
would... I'm changing. It's 4.5. It's 4.5.
Oh, also, gosh. Laura Franz, if you're looking for a character to base another book off of, Blue, three votes here.
I think that
she's going to write one.
I think for sure that's already in the works.
Laura, please.
Even the way he was written in this, I was like, oh, he's going to get his own book.
He's for sure. It could write itself. It could write itself, Laura. Yes.
But and the way that she ended the book,
if you wrote it. Yeah. Oh, we would prefer if you write it, yeah.
It feels like there could be like little pop-ins of the main characters from this book too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. For sure. Morgan, do you want to go next or do you want me to go next?
You can go next.
Okay. So my star rating is 4. So this is the second Laura France book that I read, and I liked it for a lot of reasons. I think sweet and tender is the perfect way to describe the romance. And this book, I feel like there's something about the ending of it. And I told the girls, I thought like, oh, I'm just tired, so my eyes are watering. I literally like was literally like just crying for 10 minutes afterwards because it just felt so sweet and tender, the romance. And I think one of the reasons why for me, I think the romance reader in me wanted a little bit more romance, a little bit more swoon. But upon reflection, I literally just finished this. No shocker, listeners, like 2 hours ago. Typical. But I do think that had it been as swoony as some other book, like the other book that I read of her, because I thought Rose and a Thistle that we read last season was fairly swoony in a lot of ways.
I agree.
And I think because of the nature of it, the life that they were both living was tragic in so many ways that if the romance would have been so swoony, I actually would have been like, this doesn't feel real. The romance felt very real, and it felt very relatable to me, and it felt very much like Laura Franz understands what that time is. I was joking with the girls earlier. I voiced them with them because I was frustrated about something that happened in my day, and I was like, I need to be large friends to transport me to a different time. I was like, I need to go on lunch break. And I literally sat there and I was like, I don't care that it's like, because she writes in such a powerful, evocative way that you feel like you're transported. We kind of talked about this, but because it is a book set in the 1700s, there is all the things you would expect in the book. Really, really well written. But like, there's tragedy, there's war, there's all kind of colonialist times things that people experience, and because Laura Franz is such a good writer, it was like you were transported.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to keep reading. I will say one reason why for me it's on a little bit higher of rating is I always find myself, and I think it's just the way that I read, I have a hard time getting in to historical fiction, historical romance to begin with, and then once I'm in, it's almost like I'm like eating something that I know I'm gonna enjoy, but like maybe it's a little too hot or a little bit too cold, but then like I get into it, I'm like, all I wanna do is eat this thing and it will all be gone. That's literally how. So it took me probably about 20% into the book to feel like, oh my God, the story's moving, you know, because I felt like there was just a lot happening. And it could be because in historical books, this takes me back to high school, like reading Anna Karenina or something, where there's so many names and you feel like, what do I need to pay attention to? And so your mind is like trying to, and I literally multiple times went back and read the back cover copy again because I was like, trying to figure who the main girl is, but who's, you know,
right,
and
well,
so I was,
and yeah, because he doesn't even show up until
no,
later,
yeah, yeah, anyway. So, but 4 stars, I thought it was lovely, and now I kind of think I just want to read The Rose and the Thistle again.
Yes.
All right, Morgan, what is your star rating?
My star rating is 3. I didn't necessarily jive with this book really well. I didn't dislike it per se, because I think that Laura Franz is a fabulous writer. She clearly knows the craft. She knows how to tell a story. And I was interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was enjoying reading other than the listening to the terrible Alexa voice. But, like, I enjoyed the story, but I was just, I don't know, it wasn't hitting for some reason for me. So it could have just been a timing thing. It could have been a setting thing. I don't know. But unfortunately for me, it wasn't quite there. And so I didn't really feel like I cared about Sylvie. I didn't really care about anyone else. I'm just kind of like, okay, that's nice. Okay. I mean, like, you know, theoretically, like I cared. I thought Blue was way more interesting than What's-His-Face.
Will?
Yeah. I did not.
He was a different kind of interesting to me, you know?
I just, as a main character, I was not invested in him as, like, a main male character.
Okay.
I was like, all right, well, that's nice. And then, yeah, but I do agree, I liked the side characters. And I liked, once I got into it, I was enjoying, right, like, I enjoyed the story. But, I don't know, something about it didn't quite hit for me. So it was probably my mood. Because that's real. So 3 stars for me.
It's very real. Mood reading is a total thing. It's like when someone asks me, Odette, what kind of music do you like? I'm like, that is such a hard question for me. And they're like, why? And I realized it took me until about 2 years ago to be able to articulate it. I'm a mood music listener. What mood am I in? Here's the thing.
Sure.
You can search that up on Spotify. There's a playlist for that.
Yeah.
You in a 90 Migs Ryan rom-com vibe, they have a playlist for
they
that.
They have a playlist for that.
They literally have a place. You know what? You want to be transported to a French cafe while you're making yourself a coffee in the morning? They have a playlist for that. You're cooking an Italian dinner? I'm just saying, so it's like, for me, it's like the mood ring is totally a thing. So it's like, it ties into like, what vibe am I feeling, you know? I get it.
It's so true.
I get it.
Mads Rad Reviews.
All right, Mads, what do you got for us?
Okay, I have a little mishmash here of reviews. And it just came out. Were you able to find a good amount? When we're recording this, it has very recently come out. So a lot of the reviews on here are like 4 because they've received a copy, and so they're very long reviews. But I found some fun things.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Okay, so I love this 4-star review from Hannah,
okay,
who says, as usual, I gleaned so much history from this book. It's the perfect mix of shedding light into the past while peppering it with romance and hope.
Aww. That's that's actually a really good summary. Peppering it with romance and hope. Yeah.
Here's a 3-star review. She says 3.5 stars. From Modern Miss Granger. I don't know if that's Hermione Granger or who that is, but
probably.
she said, a solid 3.5 stars, solid read, but the pacing was off and I didn't like the last half. She said, what I loved, the history was well researched and very raw depictions of this time while still being infused with hope. Here's what I didn't. The first half of the book was a lovely slow build. Then after the halfway point, I felt like I was having whiplash. I kind of get that because you don't even meet William Blackburn until like chapter 16. Like he's not even in the book at all until then. So it definitely feels like a really slow build and then everything comes crashing at the end. Okay, and then here is a, oh no.
Oh no, are you okay?
I just didn't... Oh, I can see it right here. It's a 5-star review. I cut off the top, but I remember. It's a 5-star review. From Sarah, who wrote a very long NetGalley review for this book, but I'm just going to pick a couple of spots. She had a lot to say about Sylvie and a lot to say about Will, but I wanted to read this little part. She said, I enjoyed the supporting cast. All of Sylvie's family, siblings, parents, etc. were so sweet to read about. I especially loved Blue. Eve and Henrietta and Nolan added a lovely dimension to the tale, and there are some cameos from a previous book that Franz fans will appreciate too.
Do you know what those cameos are too?
Yes, it's Esme and Captain Lennox.
Oh.
I wondered, characters are from, I believe, A Heart Adrift.
Okay. Actually, I think that's right, 'cause didn't she say something about there being in the next book? She was like, I feel like I remember that when we interviewed with her.
Oh.
Something about like Easter eggs.
Oh!
I thought I remember that.
I think
you're right.
Or maybe it wasn't our interview, maybe it was somewhere else she said that, but.
Madeline, I feel like before we dive into this book, can you share what you heard in an interview that Alara France did about this book that differentiates a little bit from like one that we read in the past from her?
Oh, sure. Yes. What's the name of the podcast, Morgan?
I can't remember
the name of the podcast.
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
While you talk.
It's a very fun podcast about films.
Oh, it was the Hallmarkies podcast, right?
Yes. The Hallmarkies podcast. So Laura was chatting on that podcast, and because one of the things that the host, and I can't think of her name, brings up to Laura is the fact that you don't meet the hero of the story until like chapter 16 of the book. Mm-hmm. And she's like, why did you do that? Just talking to her. And and Laura said that she considers this book a historical fiction and not a historical romance. And so much so that when she was writing, her publisher told her that she needed to put more romance into the book. So I thought that was interesting because the girls and I were chatting about that before. Like, this romance just feels different. Maybe a little bit different than from what we've seen from her before. So there you go. To Laura, this is not really a historical romance, but more of the historical fiction.
With a little peppering of romance and hope.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It is beautiful.
Let's dive in.
Hey. I just love that sound. I'm just so excited. I love, love, love our break. But us being back in season 3 is just making me so happy.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually thinking we do in our leadership meeting at work like one positive thing throughout the last week. Yeah. I was thinking that next Tuesday I'm going to say, well, my friends and I started recording for season 3 again.
That's awesome.
I love that.
I'll be like, okay.
I feel the same way. The break is good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always ready for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then I'm also so ready to jump back in.
Yeah. Just like all the line, like
The lineup of books for this season so far is so good.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
I know.
We are going to read books and be happy.
I know. Be happy, honestly, people. I feel like I need to make a cool graphic or like maybe a some sort of sticker that could go on our Instagram stories.
I think
there's a way to do that. I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah,
love
let's
that.
Do it.
Love it.
Anyways, okay, so let's go back to, how did Siri say, or Alexa say it?
Akadi.
Let's go back to Akadi.
Sylvie of Akadi.
Oh my god. It's not funny because it was probably torturous.
It was a long.
Listen, Alexa has no professional training, no theatrical
Alexa
background
should
whatsoever.
Probably be blamed for the reason that I didn't resonate with this book. It has nothing to do with the story or the author. So it's my own fault.
Alexa, darn you, Alexa. Okay.
Okay.
Anyways, so we're back in Akadi. Mm-hmm. Akadi. And I can't even do it. I can't even pretend. So we open with the Gallant family, and they live in this beautiful spot overlooking the Bay of Fundy. But it wasn't called the Bay of Fundy. It was called Bay Francais or something like that. And it was changed that the English are coming in.
Madeline with the context.
I can't. It's so bad. I just get into that vein and I'm like, you simplify your life, Madeline. Okay, 1754 is when the book opens. So we're on the cusp of the French and Indian War. Mm-hmm. And basically we're getting a beforehand look at one of the instances mm-hmm. of the French and Indian,
yes,
mm-hmm. of the French and Indian War, which was the English coming in, taking over what is now like Halifax, Nova Scotia, and like forcibly removing the Acadian people who lived in that region. Mm-hmm. So the Gallant family was a very prominent Acadian family, mm-hmm. and everyone knew them. They were like clan leaders. Mm-hmm. And they had this beautiful home and these beautiful orchards. Mm-hmm. And in the first few chapters, you just get this like lovely look at like what life was like. And it just talks about like how happy everyone is and mm-hmm. how like beautiful it is and how the rhythm of Sylvie's life is beautiful. The harvest time rhythm, the winter time rhythm, and mm-hmm. they're about to celebrate Noel, so which is Christmas. And so we get all these like lovely family traditions, mm-hmm. and it just sets up this beautiful picture of how wonderful their life is. And so you know something horrible is going to happen.
Well, and pretty early on too, so in the middle of that, which I thought was a really interesting thing, you kind of almost immediately, so you meet Sylvie, who's the main character, and then you meet one of her brothers, Blue, that we've mentioned, and he is sort of he's a resistance fighter, but he's also like kind of in with like the knowledge of the happenings, because if you think about 1700s, it's not like they had ways of communicating. Yes. So it was like you kind of had to hear say things. So we meet him pretty early on, and you can tell there's rumblings.
And he is part Mi'kmaq.
Yes.
Yes. Which is important, because Sylvie's father was married to a Mi'kmaq woman mm-hmm. before her mother.
And then she passed away.
So Blue is her half-brother. Mm-hmm. But they are very close.
Very close.
So he has, he has the in because he's in with all these Mi'kmaq people.
Yes, which is the native like Canadians.
First Nations peoples that were in that area. Yes. So he knows what they're doing, but then he's also like, he knows what's happening with the French, obviously mm-hmm. with the Acadians.
And with the British, he like hears rumblings about that too.
Which, listen, we've talked before about how has talked about how the hero, the romantic interest, is not introduced until like halfway through the book. And I'm not gonna lie to you guys, I had a moment where I was like, because it felt like she went out of the way to say it was her half brother. And I was like, oh man, what's gonna happen? It's too much. I can't, what's happening?
Half siblings is a genre.
I
Girl,
I know. It's not mine.
No, it's not mine. I don't judge, but it's not mine. I really had this thought that if this was in a Christian book, that would be the that would be the romance.
Well, and I was like,
she'd reject Will.
Surely not. This can't. No. No. Like, I kept saying this to myself, and then I saw Laura posted something on Instagram, and I was like, oh, there's somebody else. He's just not. We haven't met him yet. He'll be the one. Okay. Yeah. Phew. Keep on moving forward. But I literally, like, that tripped me up for a couple of chapters. I was like, there's no. What? What? She's really making a point about it being her half-sibling.
Well, but, and in Morgan's defense, Laura paints this really great picture of Blue, and you're immediately intrigued by him.
Yes.
Immediately intrigued. I also thought to myself, okay, if this is how she's describing the brother, I feel like, how's the main love interest going to be described?
I feel you.
Also, I feel like, so for context, there's 61 pages in this book and
61 chapters.
61 chapters.
Oh, I was like, what?
I think there's 400 pages.
Yes. 61 chapters. Thank you, Madeline. I feel like I just said there's 66 pages in the Bible or something like 61 chapters, and you said chapter 16 is when he. When we meet him,
so it's Will's POV.
So it's a so it's like a quarter of the way through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So not quite half.
You're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, okay, sorry. I just had to do a little bit of math there.
So, skipping along, everything's fine and dandy until...
Should we talk about the doctor, though? Because that's an interesting...
Oh, that's exactly what I was talking about.
Yes, girl.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. Everything's fine and dandy until this doctor, honestly... I cannot remember the man's name.
It was like...
Start with a B.
It was kind of like Bordeaux, but I don't think it was Bordeaux.
Bouchard? Is that right?
Boudreaux?
Something.
Give me a book, I'll flip through. Thank you. So he starts like wanting to pay court to Sylvie. And he invites her to this little ball.
He makes her spectacles?
Fete. Morgan's the only one who has any knowledge of French in this group, so Boudreaux. She will. Boudreaux. Okay.
Boudreaux.
You were right. It's like Bordeaux. But except it's not Bordeaux, because that's white.
I'm actually very impressed with the fact that I was adjacent to French
words. It is Boudreaux adjacent. Mm-hmm. Okay, so. And we find out that this guy is like interested in her, but then Blue and her other brothers, Pascal and Lucien, are like, we want you to just go along with this because we think he's a spy and find out all the information you can from him, which really is putting her in a very awkward and uncomfortable position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shame on you boys. Anyway, she goes to this fete with Boudreaux.
When Kevin, though, the way they told her is, don't let anyone know that you speak English. French. Right. So they were like, so you can hear the English, but just speak French. Because she, obviously, French was her native language, so that wasn't a problem for her. And she was like, okay. So that was kind of how they told her. But her brother also went with her.
Yes, he did. Like, he escorted her.
Mm-hmm.
It's this weird, uncomfortable situation because tensions are mounting between the French and the British. Mm-hmm. The Acadians are trying to remain neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Boudreaux keeps like coming to her family's farm and like acting like he's interested in her and like forcing her to kiss him, and it's like weird and uncomfortable. But then every day, like, Blue's like bringing back this like information about something else is happening. The like British are coming, and then soon enough, like, they look out one morning and there's all these British ships
in the harbor.
So then it's just like, now they're just like, okay, it's a matter of time. What's gonna happen? They're gonna take over the fort. I can't remember what it's called. I can only think of the fort that's in the end of the book. I can't remember what this fort's called. Anyways, they want to take over this fort.
It's like the main fort in Acadia.
You're right. But I don't know what's
called. No, I was just giving context. We don't have to know the name.
It's like on the Bay of Fundy.
Yeah.
Yes. But there was two. There was one French, one English. So they were trying to get the French fort, obviously. Yes. Fort Lawrence is the British fort.
Okay.
Anyways,
that makes sense.
These are details. So what happens then? We meet Will. So basically this is kind of where we first meet Will, is because he's on board one of these British ships that are sailing into harbor right now.
Mm-hmm.
He completely is unaware of the overarching plan mm-hmm. to force the Acadians out of their homes. He is there because he is,
a ranger.
He's a ranger, and I don't really know what he was trying to do.
Can I tell you what my supposition was, kind of based on it?
Because he was after Blue. Like, he really wanted Blue for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I think he was a elite sort of officer, if you will, a major, right? And I think that he kind of had free rein to do things because he brought results. And I think there wasn't a lot of questions asked. But I don't think he always knew the outcome. It was more like, can you go do this thing with your men?
Sure.
So I think it would be like, he would kind of go do a side thing. Like, you know, whatever it was that made sense at the time.
But he's probably like trying to get to Blue to figure out some Mi'kmaq intelligence or some such nonsense.
Or he was just, because he didn't have a context, like he heard things about this guy Blue and maybe he was just like, need to eliminate the resistance. I don't know his intentions. All I know is the first scene where they meet.
Oh my gosh. So Will shows up with his little wolf dog at the Gallant homestead. Like, startles
in the Sylvie. Orchard, right? Because she's like coming out of the barn, right? Yeah, and she has like milk pails.
She's just milked the cow. She's carrying these milk pails. And he's like.
And she literally spills milk on her shoe and he wipes it off with a beautiful handkerchief. And I think just the juxtaposition about her, the way she reacted to that versus the way she felt around the doctor. And she was just like, she said he stole a kiss from me. Like, she just, like, didn't like it. And just, like, immediately, like, him wiping milk off her shoe, she was like, oh, my God.
That was very gallant.
I know. It just felt like.
I should know.
Because my name is Gallant. Sylvie Gallant of Acadie.
Thank you, Alexa.
Alexa, learn pronunciation, please.
So they have this meeting and basically he's like, I'm looking for your brother. She's like, oh, you know, he comes and goes. I don't know where he is right now. But he doesn't tell her who he really is. Mm-hmm. He doesn't tell her why he's there, whatever.
She assumes he's part of the resistance and he like doesn't correct her.
Yeah. Right. So fast forward in a horrible sequence of events, so we won't go through all the details for the sake of time, the Acadians are forcibly removed from their homes. Mm-hmm. It, like, kind of goes in waves. Like, first the men are taken, but then finally everyone is forced from their homes and forced onto these really janky-looking ships.
That aren't even meant for, like, passengers or anything.
No, they're like cargo ships.
But they're, like, janky cargo ships. They're like, will these even make them back to the colonies? Don't know.
And they don't know where they're headed necessarily. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They end up, like, sitting in port, just trapped on these ships for weeks before the ships even move. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. disease is running rampant. Yeah. So Sylvie and her mother and her sister are all on this ship together. And her mother and her sister both die on board the ship. Her sister dies of sickness on board the ship, and then the ship gets caught in a storm and capsizes, and her mother dies in that
tragedy.
And somehow Sylvie does not die, and she ends up in this
fiction.
Also, the hand of the Lord. Keeping her.
Also, do you know what this is reminicent of? No, Hadassah in Marble the Lion.
Yeah, 100%. Like,
that's fair.
A miraculous.
That would have been a short book if she just was also gone on the ship. She's the main character.
That would have been a very short book. Because we're talking 20 chapters in here. So she ends up in a small community of refugee Acadians mm-hmm. in Virginia. Mm-hmm. They end up getting moved to this almshouse in Williamsburg. And disseminated to mm-hmm. different areas of work for them,
depending
on their skill sets.
And she's a seamstress, Avi, book title.
Throw that in there.
Well, I was like, we did never say she.
We
was
did
seamstress.
Never say that. No, but we skipped a whole bunch of stuff at the beginning where she like makes this beautiful dress for this woman in town, and then she makes one for herself and whatever, and it gets saved. Like, she takes it with her in her knapsack on the boat.
Amazingly
gets saved along with like cash.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
Also amazing.
And the material came from her brother, so it was, like, super special.
Super special, yes. So, This is where she meets Esme, Shaw, and Captain Lennox, who are from a different book, which is fun.
Are they a couple? No.
Well, oh. You'll have to read the book.
Oh.
That means yes. Yes.
The tone of your voice just told me everything I needed to know.
So basically, she ends up working at a book bindery because there's one part of book binding where you need to sew the book together. And she could do it so fast because she is a seamstress that they were like, okay, here's what you can do now.
They were like, three times as fast as everybody else.
You're going to sew all these together. So she's there. And in walks Major William Blackburn and into this book bindery in Virginia. They haven't seen each other since their last meeting.
Since he warned her.
There was
two more meetings.
You're right.
And the last one is when he basically warned her, was like, you need to get out of here. And she was like, no, like, we're not, like, she didn't really believe him. And it was like, and she had found out from the first meeting when he wiped the milk off her shoes, she thought he was part of the resistance. She finds out that he indeed is not.
So then she doesn't trust him.
She does not trust him. And so she's not about him, despite the fact that her heart feels like it likes him.
And she was, the last time they met, she was throwing verbal punches at him.
Which, like, I was like, you go, girl.
Oh, yeah.
You go, Sylvie. So she's obviously been through a lot. Between, like, that instance where she, like, told him off and threw her verbal punches.
And now in the book bindery.
In the book bindery, yes. And so he sees her, and she sees him, and she, like, kind of freaks out.
Oh, yeah. And he kind of freaks out.
And they're both like, what? Because he hasn't been able to get her out of his
mind.
He's
like, Mademoiselle Galant? And she's like... No, I don't think they talked to each other at that meeting. But then he's spending the rest of... the next few chapters trying to figure out why she's here.
Yeah.
He's like staying with this other family in town because he has this new job as a surveyor. But he's also purchased this large...
I thought he was gifted it. I think he purchased it. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh.
I thought it was like a gift from the one guy who had all that acreage.
I have no idea. I can't remember that detail. But it's a large property that was a plantation. On the Rivanna River.
It was a gift.
Okay. So he's been given this property. And so he's like going back and forth between surveying and kind of like trying to figure out what to do with this property. So basically what ends up happening, there's a lot that happens, but what ends up happening is he is partnering with this guy, Lord Drysdale, who is kind of championing the Acadian cause, and then Captain Lennox, who's also championing the Acadian cause. And working together to try to keep the Acadians from being further,
enslaved.
Like, moved.
Yes.
So he's like, hey, I have this large property that I want to bring back to life. Any Acadians looking for work, come with me to this property and I will...
This is Blackburn.
Pay you, Blackburn. I will pay you a good wage.
And you can live there. And
room and board. And come help me, and we'll build a community there together, and it'll be a safe place for you. So,
and they loved farming, and most of them, that was their skill set, or, like, tending the land was a huge thing, like, for generations.
Yes.
In Acadie, so.
In Acadie. So a lot of the Acadians end up going with Blackburn. I'm trying to decide how to say all of these things. Okay, so there's an outbreak of smallpox in Williamsburg that kind of clinches it for most of the Acadians who were kind of on the fence about going with this guy. They were like, you know what? Yeah.
Because it was 100 miles.
Like now feels like a great time
west.
To leave.
It was 100 miles east. No, west.
West.
West,
yes.
Yeah.
They're like, now feels like a great time to leave Williamsburg. Yes, we're going. And then he has this like one final meeting with... because at this point she was working in the governor's palace, which if you've ever been to Williamsburg, you've probably been to the governor's palace. It's gorgeous.
As a French tutor for the governor's daughters.
Yes. So at this point she's working in the governor's palace, and he's like, come with me, Sylvie. Come with me.
Yeah.
Come with me. And there's like so much implied in that. Oh, there's so much implied.
And she's like, no.
And then she does.
But, like, I feel like we should give a little caveat without going into details.
Caveat.
So, between them seeing each other in the bookstore and him trying to figure out why she's there, they end up, and then, like, him coming to the governor's mansion manner, saying, hey, Sylvie, come with me. They have a lot of interactions, and she hears a lot of things. Her heart is softening towards him.
Oh, yeah.
In the meantime, he had published a journal, and all the proceeds were going to help Acadian refugees. He also, like, she found out that he had literally, when he found out what was happening, had, like, retired his post and had, like, I'm not part of the military. Like, he was like, nope, I'll be a surveyor, but I'm not gonna, like, I'm not going to participate in this. And basically, from his point of view, too, he has not been able to stop thinking about her. And so it's like when, and he, they go to a ball together and have fun, like, it's just this, and they, like, anyway, so there are some really sweet moments. The reason why I'm saying that is because she's definitely feeling things towards him, but does not think, like, oh, it's worth pursuing. Because she's like, no, I'm going to be fine. He's like, no, like, smallpox is really bad. Like, you're not immune to it. I am. He's like, come with me. So she's like, no. And then as soon as he leaves, she runs upstairs, instantly regrets it. Instant regret. And then she's kind of like sewing clothes and stuff, and then he comes back for her.
Gosh.
In the rain.
Oh my gosh.
And she sees him. She's like, he would be out in this rain. There he is, Will.
What is that? Oh, it's the Gwyneth Paltrow version of Emma, where Knightley comes back for Emma, and he goes, I walked through the rain.
I was also thinking about the ending of the newest version of Little Women, when Jo chases after Laurie in the rain.
You mean Professor Bear?
Yes.
She does that in a couple of versions, but...
But the rain.
Yes. Professor Bear! Professor Bear!
Oh, these hands that are so empty.
My hands are empty.
And my heart is so full.
Oh, it's so good.
Feel like they're not empty anymore?
Then she grabs him and goes, not empty now.
But picture that energy what I was picturing when she sees him. And
it was a similar energy.
And jumps over puddles and is like running.
She's like running through puddles like blatantly in the middle of the street. Yes. Like yelling, wow, wow, shouting his name.
And he just... is kind of standing there with his horse.
He just, like,
horse.
Turns around. And he's like, hi, Sylvie.
I've been waiting for this moment all my life. Oh, Lord.
Well, that was playing in the background.
That's a different energy.
You get it, listeners. So then basically she goes back with him. I feel like we need to wrap this up.
You get it, listeners.
She's like, yes, I want to go back with you. And also we had met, I feel like we didn't talk about this, Madeline. Do you want to talk about Henrietta and Nolan?
Oh my gosh! Oh. Yes, okay, so the foundlings. Yes. While she was working at the bookbindery, there was an enslaved woman. I think she was owned by the guy who owned the bookbindery.
Mr. Hunter, yes, correct.
Right?
Yes.
So this enslaved woman, her name is Eve. She was in charge of these two kids who were Mr. Hunter's children? No.
I thought they were described in the book as foundlings, right?
But for some reason, they were, like, staying with Mr. Hunter.
Yeah.
I thought that they were his sister's kids.
That's it.
Oh, okay.
That his sister and brother-in-law, unfortunately, passed away.
Yes.
And so they were orphans. And so he was in there. They were in his care, but he was like, I don't got time for kids. I got a book binder.
I have books to bind, people.
These books won't bind themselves.
But Sylvie will bind them for me.
But Sylvie will line up for me. So basically, Sylvie meets these two delightful children while she's working there, falls in love with them. They fall in love with her, obviously. And then once she goes to work at the governor's palace, she, like, keeps coming back. And, like, she's checking on them during the smallpox outbreak to see if they're sick, to see if Eve's okay. And then one day she goes back to look for them, and they're not there. And she's, like, freaking out. But then she sees Will in the street, and basically Will has, like, already retrieved the children.
And arranged. Talk about romance.
I know.
Because she mentioned the kids to him multiple times. Like, he knew that they...
Oh, yeah. Yes. He knew that they needed to come with them.
He already, like, had taken them under his, like, legal care, basically.
Yes. So they went with... So the children got to go with Will and Sylvie. So there they are. They're on their way. They said goodbye to Eve. And... they go to this plantation, outpost, whatever you want to call it, thing on the Rivanna River. The other thing we need to mention is this woman named Lisalette Kersey,
She was the daughter of the family that Will was staying with.
Yes, or the the niece of the family.
The niece, yeah.
So she made up her mind that she wanted to marry Will.
Even though she was she was used to the fine life. Like, she wasn't used to, like, working the land.
She didn't even go there.
She was a gentlewoman. Do you guys want to know how Alexa pronounced that? Because I was like, who the heck are you talking?
Oh, tell us how.
Do tell. I'm dying to know.
Lizzie Lottie. So I was like, who? Oh, Lizzie Lottie. Gotcha. And I thought in my head, I was like, that's a very, like, 1950s Wisconsin sounding name. Lizzie Lottie.
Like, okay, well, sure.
I am a...
I'm trying not to pee my pants. I'm laughing so hard.
Anywho, here, I'll save us. So we meet her.
Thank you.
And she's basically like, listen, you know how I'm going to win this Will guy over? Even though everyone else around them is clearly like, Sylvia and Will have a thing for each other. Like, people are like asking her about it. She's like, yeah. And so she's like, you know what? I'm going to go to this 100-mile-away plantation, and I'm going to manage the plantation.
And then he's going to fall.
And he's going to fall head over heels.
Head over heels for me.
She's the only one living in this... Delusion. Fantasy. Hululu, as people say these days.
People do say that. That's real. I've heard it.
They sometimes say, I'm in my Delulu era, you know? Just gonna live in the delusion.
Well, her name is Lizzie Lottie, so...
Lizzie Lottie.
She would be Delulu. So...
Okay, anyways. So, skipping ahead. Basically, Sylvie has all of these... healing experiences at this plantation. She starts to like consider it a new home and not just like a haven, but like an actual home. And it's like beautiful. And Will, they have all these lovely little encounters. And Will finally asks her to marry him. And she says yes.
Like, of course.
And they're going to get married. And then... this weird thing happens.
So he's like surveying in the meanwhile. Because this is like months on end.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So he's going and surveying. So he leaves to go survey. And he's like, by the way, I'm going to find us a minister to marry us. Because
they're like sneaking kisses all the time. On the
slide. Yeah.
But because she's Catholic and he is Protestant. So in this time, that's a BFD.
That's a big...
Yeah, it's a whole big thing.
Okay, so interesting, because how I took that was that, but also the fact that she was... Arcadian, and he was
Acadian, like French Protestant.
Yes, and papists.
She's a papist.
And he was. Oh, is that what that means? I did not know. Okay, that makes more sense, because I thought it was because she was a refugee and like he.
It was because of her religion.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Anyways, continue.
So he had to find a pastor who would marry a papist and a Protestant. And so that's our, like, you know who we should find? A Baptist. They don't care about that sort of thing.
That's literally the advice of one of the neighbors that he asked about. Because everyone's like,
that's hilarious.
Oh, are you marrying Sylvie? And he's like, yeah. And the one lady's like,
well, I feel like the Baptists in the 1750s were like the evangelicals.
Right, absolutely.
Like, they were the more like free thinking.
For sure.
They were baptizing. That's where the name comes from.
Baptizers.
Baptizers.
Anyways, so this weird thing happens. Off goes Major Blackburn on a survey.
And they're engaged, and he's like, I'm gonna come back.
He got her a ring.
Yeah. But she's like, not wearing the ring because she's not telling the rest of the community, but like, here's the thing, everybody knows,
i.e. what happens next.
But he does, but one little caveat, you have to tell the little gem that Will tells her. So Will says, watch this one guy, Sebastian. He has a thing for you. And she's like, no, he doesn't. He's like, yeah.
Ever treated him with kindness like I would a friend.
And he's like, no, I'm telling you right now. She's like, what about Lynette? What's her name?
Lizzie Lottie.
Lizzie Lottie. No,
what about Lizzie Lottie?
I think it's Lieselette.
I'm sure it's
Lieselette.
It's absolutely Lieselette. Because like Liesel.
Lieselette.
It could be Lisa Lott. Or it could be. Because it's Lizzie Lottie. It could be Lizzie Lottie.
Technically, we don't know.
We don't know.
Listeners, weigh in.
Weigh in.
Laura, you could go ahead and weigh in.
Yeah. For sure. Laura, you probably know for sure.
Yeah.
You probably know for sure.
Also, maybe the audiobook would give us some helping.
I bet the actual audiobook would really be helpful here.
Like, we are really pitching the audiobook and we've never listened to it. And honestly, I feel like that's wise.
We because know compared that to it's gonna be
Alexa
great.
Reading it to you, it's going to be fabulous.
I know. But
10
what
out
I,
of 10 would recommend.
Would not recommend. So
no, would recommend the audiobook.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying 10 out of 10 would not recommend Alexa is what I was saying.
Also, yes.
Also true.
On both
I mean,
sides.
In a pinch.
Gotta do.
Yeah. Anywho, so he's basically like, Sebastian has this thing, and in the meantime, Sebastian like runs away or whatever, and she's like, well,
he heads back to Akkadi.
Yeah, yeah, he's
that's
gone.
Like,
yes.
No, he's
like, oh,
going
he's gone.
To he's going to Fort Duquesne.
Yes. Duquesne. And he's stolen two horses. Duquesne. And basically, Will's thought was that's more of a loss than Sebastian.
As soon as I'm sorry. Right. Whenever he's like, oh, he took two horses with him, Morgan's going, okay.
The funny thing is, I did not see that. I thought he was going to sell one of the horses.
Morgan's like, I'm like, too many mysteries to know that something
like that was coming
around.
Back and kidnapping Sylvie for sure.
For sure.
Why else would he take two horses?
Yes.
Seb, they're just going to slow you down otherwise.
Yes. I thought he was going to try to sell it or something, but it makes sense now. But so before Will leaves,
like,
he tells Lisonette.
Lisi Lottie.
He tells Lisi Lottie that this reminds me in college, the restaurant Qdoba. I could never understand how to pronounce it. And so my friends, every time I'd be like, do you want to go to that restaurant? And they'd always, whatever way I said it, they would be like, it's not said like that. So I would never say it the right way. And finally, I would just be like, that place that.
Wait, how would you say it? You just said it.
Qdoba.
Right? Oh, Qdoba. I'd have heard you say it like that.
Qdoba. It's because in college, my one roommate in particular, she'd be like, wait, Odette, it's Qdoba. I was like, oh, okay, well, you want to go to Qdoba?
It's just Qdoba, isn't it? Qdoba?
Qdoba.
It's not Qdoba either.
I just, like, Qdoba.
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 What
does it mean?
I don't know.
Anywho, not sponsored. I digress, wow. Okay, so here's the thing.
Okay, so Blackburn leaves.
But no, he tells Lisi Lottie that he is like after Sylvie. He's like, we're gonna get married, I'm not interested in you.
Yes.
And
they
she's
have
like
a conversation.
Yeah.
And she like follows him and she's like, no, but like don't you know?
Like follows him in a flirtatious manner.
And she's like, don't you think people will frown upon that because she's a dirty papist?
Yeah.
Basically what she says.
And he's like, don't care.
Yeah. So that's how that ends. So Sebastian does come back with his two horses. Morgan knew that was going to happen. And they staged this
whole time, buddy.
They staged a bee attack on Nolan.
Lisolette and her, oh my word. I mean, she's a golly. Okay, so she stages this whole thing. Sebastian kidnaps Sylvie, takes her away.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to Fort Duquesne's, where there's supposedly some Acadians have gathered there.
Yep.
Lisi Lottie.
Yeah. Yes.
I can't talk about that right now. Lisi Lottie leaves this horrible note written in Sylvie's with Sylvie's name, basically explaining to Blackburn, like, hey, I can't marry you.
I never loved you. Yeah.
You know what? I decided to go with Sebastian.
I'm gonna throw my lot in with Sebastian.
And please don't contact me. Please don't try to come find me.
Don't call me.
It's not me. It's not you. It's me. So
yeah.
Sebastian is horrible and is it's heavily insinuated that he's like not mentally well.
Yeah.
So, and that he also has like evil intentions.
Oh, for sure.
In every possible way.
Yes.
This.
Yeah.
So
sure.
They're like on
and
their
he's
way.
And he's like, I'm gonna take you to your brother Blue, and she's like, as much as I want to see Blue, she's like.
Yeah, but she finds out for the first time that Blue is here and in Fort Duquesne's.
And
like, that's
alive.
The first time she finds out. So, okay, we gotta wrap this. But, so, what happens is they go to ford this river.
Oh, yeah.
And Sebastian's like, just do it! We're gonna ford this river right here! He drowns in the river with his horse.
It's pretty horrible.
Sylvie, it is horrible. Sylvie makes it across with her horse. And she's like, wow, God, you saved me again. What's happening to me? I'm completely lost and now I'm completely alone. She wanders for a few days, passes out. Some Indians find her.
Mm-hmm. And they speak French.
One of them speaks French.
Yes.
She tells them who she is. They take her to her brother, Blue.
Yeah.
She meets back up with Blue. Joyous reunion. Wonderful reunion.
Yes.
Blue gets the whole sitch on Blackburn. And what are the haps?
And he's also like, Blackburn sent me a letter, and I'm all about this.
And he goes, so where are you going?
She goes, home.
So where are we going? He said. And she goes, finally she decides, home is where we're going. So they head back in the direction of Ravana, and then boom, out of nowhere, the little puppy, what's his name? Bonamy. Comes loping up, and
the wolf puppy.
Of course, close behind, Blackburn. They have a reunion.
Which was fun because you thought that he might be dead. The last time we'd seen Bonamy, he was suffering from a venomous snake bite.
Oh, yes. He was bitten by a copperhead.
Then you see him and you're like, because, oh, hey, Bonamy
lived. There was one in Will's bed.
Yeah.
Yes.
A snake in his bed.
Literally. And in his boot. We don't know.
That was how I said it in my head. There's a snake in my bed.
What is that from?
Toy Story.
Toy Story?
Oh, yeah.
Classic. Anyways.
Classic.
A classic. Okay, so basically what happens is they all go home together. Blue decides to go with them, which Sylvie's really surprised about that. She's like, oh, he's coming with us to Ravana? How long is he going to stay? And then they have Will and I guess they found a Baptist.
They found a Baptist.
They did. Remember? Yeah. He was like, because he was basically like, away. Yeah, because she tells him kind of what happened. And he was like, honestly, that letter didn't look like your handwriting. So I didn't think it was you. But he also like, because he's obviously been looking for her.
So they come back, and it's beautiful, and she's reunited with Henrietta and Nolan, and they get married in the orchard like she wanted to.
Since childhood.
Yes, since she was little. She wanted to get married in her family's orchard. Mm-hmm. And she got to get married in an orchard, which is beautiful. And then you're like, but wait, what's going to happen to Blue? And it's kind of a question mark.
And we don't know. Because
she points out a couple of ladies who are...
She's like, hey, look at these eligible women here, Blue.
And he's kind
of
like,
what do you think of her? What do you think of her?
And he's like, yeah.
And Blue's like,
my only eyes over my country.
Do you know, here's the thing. Do you know, okay, I know that this is a totally different genre, and I know that this is a totally different, but do you know who I was, like, the type of vibe of the woman that I think he would potentially need?
Oh, okay.
Because it could go one of two directions. One is a complete opposite, that she's like a high society woman, you know, type sitch.
Okay.
Like that story. Okay. Or, do you remember Cheyenne from Brace for Love?
Stop it.
Girl, I was literally thinking that same thing. I was like, is this a Cheyenne situation?
Does he also time travel to the 1800s?
What was that?
Falcon?
Falcon. I almost said goose.
Or hawk. Do you remember that goose guy?
That's from...
Brace for Love.
No, goose. But what goose? From the... Tom Cruise.
Oh.
Maverick.
Oh,
right?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Right? Wasn't that his name?
Yeah, I think so. Goose. Yeah. Somebody's
but anyways, goose. Again, anyways, I'm going to plug
Falcon
this.
Falcon and Cheyenne.
I'm going to plug this is I'm here for Blue's romance, whatever that is.
Absolutely, yes.
I really hope that she writes
that
the
way
story.
You said that. Also, can I say that Odette is a French name, and I think we need a heroine named Odette that Blue falls in love with. I'm just going to put that out there.
Wow.
That would be great.
But then I was wondering if we do get Blue's story and she writes, even if it's like a novella or something, she writes like Blue's story. Have we already met his love interest?
Yeah, Madeline was speculating about that in the car.
Oh my gosh. Okay, good point.
And then you know what story I want to see?
Yeah.
Do tell us. I want to see Blue and Eve.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be so good?
That would be so good. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I see that story.
Three options I see this being then. A Cheyenne type character, like basically equally woods lady, like trained.
Yes, trained woods lady. Yes.
A high society for the juxtaposition of those two.
Yes.
And then like.
Trained and woods lady.
Because you know he's always
equally
like,
trained. Equally trained woods lady. Yeah. Absolutely.
And then Eve, and then the high society woman. In three dimensions.
Oh, sheesh.
I don't know what to say.
Could go either of those three ways.
So. Or maybe fourth way, and none of us know.
Oh my gosh.
Wow, okay.
Whew. And that was the seamstress of Acadie.
That was the seamstress of Acadie.
Morgan's recommended reads.
All right, Morgan, what do you got for us?
All right, so I wanted to go for the element that jumped out the most in this book to me was the kind of seamstress element. And honestly, it feels like it kind of, I don't know. Like, in the beginning, I thought that was going to be more the point. Sure. And then the ending, or the middle and the ending, it wasn't really. So it might not seem as relevant. But that is the element that I went for, because that's what stood out the most to me.
No, it is in the title.
Well, still right. Thematic, too.
Right, yes.
And she then, does so everywhere she goes.
It's true.
Everywhere she goes?
And, well, I mean, and especially that's her talent and passion and and training. But also that's something that, as someone who majored in fashion in college, I've always been interested in fashion history. Anytime a book includes good historical costuming detail, I just am like immediately drawn to it. So that's what I picked. And to be fair, I've only read two Laura France books, but I think that both of them, she clearly is interested when she does research in the fashion of the time, because that was also included in Rose and the Thistle. Some really lovely details about historical garments and fabrics and things like that. So the two that I picked were, also they talked a little bit about, this is just kind of a random aside that I thought was fun. They talked in the very beginning, so when she gets commissioned, when Sylvie gets commissioned for making a dress for somebody quite important, I don't remember who it was.
In Acadie.
She gets a pompadour, which is like a little fashion doll.
Yes.
That they would, you would only have them if you were pretty affluent, because it was literally a model of the dress sewn in tiny proportions on this little fashion doll instead of like a pattern. You would get a mock-up of the gown. And the doll would be very, like, delicate and usually have, like, your coloring and, you know, your hairstyle and all of that stuff. Like, it was very... I knew about these because of Felicity, the American Girl. Her doll that she had was one of those types of dolls, because that's why they had the exact same dress. Like, it was a little fashion doll that was, like, this is the dress I want to make for myself for the governor's ball. Anyways, that's always just been a fun... So anytime I see those in fashion or in fiction, I'm like, oh, Felicity. Anyways, so the two that I picked were, one is kind of an author's catalog, and then one is a specific series.
Okay.
So the author's catalog, caveat to this, this is a Christian fiction author. It is not necessarily my favorite author in the world. I think what she does do, I think, is writes historical fashion really well, and she, as an author, is very interested in it, and so then if you go to her website, she always has extra detail for every one of her books about, like, extra fashion detail that she was like, I couldn't put this into the book, but here's a bunch of other stuff that I found that was really interesting. And that is Deanne Gist. She writes in the 1800s, I believe, possibly even early 1900s, but 1800s for sure. But she's written, I'm trying to think, I've read a few of her books, the Trouble series, I think. Trouble with courting or something like that. I'm not going to be able to remember titles. I probably should have. But in general, I think that's something she does well, and you could tell that she's very interested in it. So if you enjoy reading historical fiction with that, an author who's interested in the fashion of the time, I think Deanne Gist is a good one. And the other one is modern, but I thought it was so well done that I wanted to include it, and that is a cozy mystery series, and it's called Pleating for Mercy by Melissa Bourbon.
What a cute name.
Pleading. Anyways, so in this series, I want to explain just a smidge. It is the concept of this. It's almost paranormal, almost. Not really, though.
Okay.
It has this, like, and I don't normally like stuff like that, but I loved this. All the women in this family have some sort of gift. And it's like
this, a magical gift?
Yes, basically. Okay. Where it's like unexplainable, they just have this gift. And so it literally is like magic is coming out of them when it comes through this one specific thing. For the main character in this, it is sewing. Like, she can look at a person and she knows what outfit they need to have. She's like, let me make this outfit for you. And sometimes they agree, sometimes they don't. But she's like, no, this is the outfit that you need to have. And it's like, what for whatever the occasion, whatever. Like, okay. But she knows it before they even ask. Design me an outfit for a ball. She just knows. She sees a ball gown. Hi, when she meets you.
You know?
Maybe so I that's have her a gift. I don't sew clothes, but I do look at people and I'm like, oh, that would actually look good on you, or right. Ooh, if you did XYZ.
And so hers, like her mom's is gardening. Her grandmother's is, this is funny, goats. She's gifted with goats. It's like they speak to her, she speaks to them kind of thing. Like they understand each other. So she has a bunch of goats.
But does she like talk to them? Like
no, wait, not like that. But it's like they communicate. You know what I mean? Like okay. She can talk to them and they respond to her, but she's the only person they'll respond to. Mm. That kind
like
of
thing. Dr. Doolittle situation.
But then her, yes, sure. Except they don't physically talk. But then her great grandmother also had this sewing.
Oh, I thought that was also did goats. I was like, no. Come into play?
But anyway, so she was like kind of tried to break away from this like weird, and it's all the women in her family and everyone in the town knows about. They're all kind of crazy. So she left the small town and then came back and opened up this dressmaker shop, and it's a cozy mystery. So there's someone dies and she solves the murder and it's whatever, but it's lovely like fashion detail just kind of thrown all the way through. So that's very different vibe
fun.
Than Seamstress McKady.
That's so fun.
But really fun fashion elements if you're into that.
That's always really fun. I love that, Morgan. Thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Odette's relevant research. So I have kind of a plethora of things, of random things. I actually highlighted a bunch in my Kindle. So one of them, and these are in kind of no particular order, but the last one I'm very excited about. Okay, I mean, I'm excited about all these, but specifically the last one I'm putting it last for a reason. Oh. Okay, so one of them is, and these are random things that I just like stood out to me when I was reading, and I was like, what is that? So one is, there's this scene where Will is like upset about something, and he's like, I wish I could drown my woes in smoky bunch of pipes or potent bowls of Atarak punch. And I was like, what is that? Mm. Don't know what it is. It seems like an old-timey beverage of sorts. So sure. Here's the thing. There are recipes for it online, but I was like, I need to know what it is. Okay? So what is the difference between rum and Atarak? Okay? Bavaria Batvia. Atarak is actually a type of rum, but it is distinguished by the special red Javanese rice, which is malted, made into cakes, and then put into the molasses. Yeast spores on the dried cake of rice start to ferment and contribute to the arak's distinct flavor.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
And the recipe that I found for an arak punch is the arak, Jamaican rum, lemon juice, simple syrup, and pineapple juice.
Okay, that sounds great.
That does sound good. Yeah, it does sound good. I'd be interested to like have that in a drink, but I feel like the collection of flavors, I don't know that I would like to drink something that was fermented from like a rice, I don't know, cake situation, but who knows.
Do you like sake?
I do like sake.
Right? No. So that's fermented rice. Yeah.
The cake part is what I'm not sure about.
Oh.
Because it might be like sweet, do you know? I don't know, but anyways, who knows. Sure. Okay.
Never had it.
Didn't know about it till today, to be honest, so didn't have time to buy any. So then the other one is, and some of these might be things that like other people know, but I, wasn't sure about. So one thing is when, Will's first describing the way he sees, this is funny, Sylvie, he uses this word comely, and I was like, what does that mean? You know, I was like, I thought that was like, for some reason, I thought that was like a negative.
Because it sounds like homely.
Exactly. Yeah. So comely actually means pleasant to look at, attractive, typically used to describe a woman. It means similar, attractive, good looking, nice looking, beautiful, pretty, or handsome. Next.
Handsome woman.
Yes. Next. So Sylvie is describing how much money she made with her job, and she literally says it was 17 shillings and a sixpence, and so I was trying to figure out what that was.
A week or a month?
I'll tell you in just a second. I literally highlighted it. Good question.
I know because I highlighted 17 shilling and sixpence.
Through the wages were small, a week.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so
It says
how much I Googled, and some of it is apparently shillings, since they're technically not in monetary value at all. There's not a actual like, they know for sure the value in today's dollars.
Right. But, yeah.
Although the British shilling was about 1/4 of a dollar in silver, the value of 1/8 of a dollar is clearly printed on a 1776 colonial New York 1 shilling note.
Oh, okay. 1/8 of a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
1/8 of a silver dollar.
Okay. 12 cents. Right? 12 cents.
Yeah, something like that.
13.
Yeah, because it's like I don't know.
Right, 1/8, because a 1/4 mm-hmm. of a dollar would yes. be 25 cents.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it'd be like 12 or 13 cents.
So
12 and a half cents.
12 and a half, yes. So under a dollar, I could probably estimate. No, well, if she had 17
shillings. Madeline, do you have your calculator out?
So that's like $2.
Okay.
What is well, sixpence?
And a sixpence. Is that half of a shilling?
Hold on, I'll tell you.
Why have such small, such small?
It says it's a pence is a sum of money. It's potentially approximately $1.25. But a sixpence is probably a sixth of that. Oh, here we go. How many shillings are in a sixpence? Good God.
How many shillings are in a six? Why would you say 17 shillings and a sixpence?
Because I think it's like and a half, maybe.
Right. Well, that was my guess. 17
shillings and sixpence. What's a sixpence?
I'm looking it up right now. Sixpence.
I'm confused.
Okay, here we go.
I think of that line.
It has, check it out.
My fair lady.
It has the value of 21/2 of a new pence.
What's the value of a new pence?
0.25 in euros.
In euros? We're trying to get to dollars.
I'm just telling you what I'm Googling.
Oh, Lord.
This is the most hilarious thing. What on earth?
Okay, let's see.
In euros?
Honestly, I'm sorry, listeners. If anyone knows what this
please help sixpence was like, that's British. Anyway, so why would I say it in euros?
Remember that band?
What?
Sixpence None the Richer.
Remember that yes. band?
I don't remember that.
I remember the name band.
Anyways, moving on.
Oh, man.
The other please, one.
Listeners, if you know what
tell us.
17 shillings and sixpence has anything to do with, please help us.
Please tell us what that would equate in today's dollars.
Please.
In America. Okay, so.
If you give it to us in euros, we send it back.
If you tell us that we need to convert it from euros to dollars, we send it back.
No, that's too much math.
Too much math. What did Shannon say when we talked to her? I don't do math after 8. I feel like that needs to be my new mantra for life.
Yes.
Okay. The other one is a sennight. So it's S-E-N-N-I-G-H-T. I was like, I think I know what that means, but...
What did you think it meant?
I thought it meant a set amount of time, potentially like a week or more. Uh-huh. It technically means 7 days yes. and nights.
Because seven, like it's sen, like S-E-V-E-N. And then a fortnight is 2 weeks because 14 days.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm getting it. I'm getting it. Okay.
I read a lot of Victorian literature. So all of these, like, I'm like, yeah.
Love it.
Okay. So there's this thing in dating these days. I don't know that you ladies being married
I don't.
For a while know about.
And didn't really date, to be honest.
So. Oh, no. Dating? What's that?
Yeah.
I could tell you some stories. And I have this. But there's this new trend going on, and a lot of it is basically you're looking for, it's not a red flag, but it's something that you're like, it's called
beige
an ick.
Flag?
No. Oh. Well, beige flags are a thing, but for the purpose of this,
I don't understand an ick. Either. An ick.
An ick. So it's basically something, and some of them are outlandish. Like, there's some people who, like, they'll be like, oh, I went on a date with a guy, and he bent down and tied his shoe on the sidewalk, and that was an ick for me.
What?
Okay, so.
The man's just trying to stay safe.
I know. I also was like, maybe.
Where is he supposed to tie his shoe?
Also, I was like, was it the way that he tied his shoe? Like, did he bend over weirdly or, like, put his shoe on a garbage can? I don't know. I don't know what would make it an ick to me. I'd be
even
like, wow.
So, what is bending over weirdly to tie your
I don't
shoe?
Know, maybe
how do you
putting
do
your
it?
Booty in there?
A little bend and snap situation.
Okay.
Anyway,
I would just start laughing, I think.
Like, I know, here's, the thing. Here's also the
what
thing.
An interesting character you are.
So, you're probably like, your dad, why are you talking about icks? I'm talking about icks because, honestly, being a spy, an ick, you know what I'm saying? The doctor, in the beginning of the book, was like, only dating her to get to...
Isn't Blue kind of a spy, though, also?
No, but not in the way that Doctor... What's his name was?
I think it is. He's just for the other side and more handsome.
But also, he wasn't also creepy. The Doctor was creepy and forced kisses.
I think that creepy rapists are an ick for you, I would say.
Well, yes, but can you just... For this particular thing...
Well, yes.
Obviously, yes. But for the purpose of this, the reason why I bring it up is because I felt like... And initially, I was like, ooh, a doctor coming courting. And then I was like, oh, no. The way he is and, like, just how... He just was... He clearly had intentions, and it wasn't about her. He was using her.
Oh, yeah.
Using her. And so, to me, being a spy and using someone in that way is an ick.
Sure.
Okay, so...
But being a handsome spy who's just mysterious...
Mysterious men are not necessarily an ick by any means.
I'm just saying.
But, like...
Blue is for sure a spy, right?
But, like, yeah. Being a spy in itself, it's the fact that...
It's the
using using a woman for your own gain.
Yes.
And anyways, I'm not going to digress. Anyways.
Espionage
can be that. Okay. That's fair. So I looked up 40 of the biggest icks that people get dumped.
Oh, man.
So these are
people get dumped for.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So these actually, here's the thing. I want you two as the married ladies to tell me if these are legitimate reasons.
Okay.
I'm not going to say either way. I'm just going to read this list, okay? I'm probably not going to read all 40, but maybe because it's fun. We'll start there.
Side note, Madeline, we are going to have to put ourselves in the position of, like, you don't... I've been married to my husband for 11 years.
Yeah.
So some of them might be like, of course not.
You're not married.
But if it's like, I've just been hanging out with him for...
Well, I mean, like, what's a legitimate... Okay. Like, think of it in the lens of... Because an ick is like...
I would dump this person for that.
Pre-marriage. Right. Yeah,
pre-marriage. Dump. Get him out.
Okay. Smelling bad. Pretending to be more knowledgeable about something than they actually are. Being overbearing and rude.
Oh, that's an ick.
Double texting. Sending a secondary text if you've not responded after the first one.
That is not
an ick. I do that all the time. I type too fast for my own brain and I need to send a second
text. I can't even tell you how often I do that to my husband. It'll be like one text and then there's like eight from me.
Oh, I can show you 15,000
right now.
I do that. Having bad teeth?
No. No. I feel like a lot of times... Teeth stuff, that's genetic. You can't always help that.
Yeah. Also, like, maybe he didn't have money.
Hygiene. Yeah. Huh?
Maybe he didn't have money to get his teeth fixed when he was younger.
Yeah, or maybe his teeth have been fixed multiple times and they're still not great because it's genetic.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't mean that
like, it doesn't necessarily,
Being rude to a waiter.
That's an ick.
Yeah, that's something I look at on a first date for sure. Okay.
Like, just how do you treat people? Like,
yes.
Come on.
Living in a mess, that's an ick for me. Depending on the level of mess.
Depends on the level.
Like, if
there's
like,
a fixable level, like, oh, I can train into that, and then there's, like, this, the public safety should be called.
Yes.
Yeah.
That,
sure.
That's when it becomes an ick. If it's just, like, okay, you're messier
you're
than
slob.
I am.
Slob is different than living in squalor.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And filth.
Sure.
Yes.
Agree.
Having dirty fingernails, speaking of living in squalor.
Short dirty fingernails or long dirty fingernails?
It just
fingernails?
Says having dirty fingernails.
Short dirty fingernails, not an ick.
Long dirty fingernails.
On a man?
Ick.
But I feel like, too, my thing is, like, I wouldn't not date somebody for that only reason.
Right. No. I don't think I would dump them for that, but I would just be like...
Like, can you take care of those, please?
Yes, absolutely.
I'd be like, let's go get manicures together. No, I'm just kidding.
Or something.
Chewing with their mouth open. Being too clingy. Talking too loud. Eating and talking at the same time. That is a bad habit of mine that I'm trying to break. Being obsessed with their star signs.
That's an ick.
I think
some of these could go kind of either direction.
Sure. I've never
having long fingernails.
A man who was
having long fingernails on signs. Men is, it's definitely not my favorite, but
yeah.
I would not say
that. So I think these, cause these are that people are dumped for, you
sure.
know,
people
generally.
Are dumped. Right. I'm
yeah.
not going to dump.
Putting on a baby voice.
In what
It just says putting on a baby voice.
Around a baby? Of course it's never an ick. That's cute.
I'd be like, look how good he is with kids, but like...
Or like maybe if he's like telling a story and like, I don't...
But if he just started talking to you in a baby voice and you're like at a restaurant, dude.
If he's talking to me and directing it at me as if I'm the baby, absolutely not. But if he's like telling a story and then just launches into some sort of caricature voice and that caricature is a baby, no. That's not
an ick. If he's putting on a a like he's doing a bit, so to speak.
That's nice.
Exactly. breathing heavily.
That's that's subjective. Like, what why would you dump somebody for I that?
Exactly. Oversharing on social media.
I wouldn't dump them, but I would
have conversations.
Have a conversation.
Referring to themselves in third person.
Yeah, no. Can't do it. That's an ick.
Referring to their football team as we.
That's annoying, but I'm just not a sports person, so I think I'd just be like, I don't get it.
Clapping when an airplane lands. Wearing sunglasses indoors.
I just want to comment, somebody got dumped for clapping when an airplane lands. I think they're trying to just be, like, encouraging.
Exactly.
I've clapped many a time when an airplane landed. You know what?
I'll go on the record here, because this is a recording, and I will say that, to me, more of an ick is people who get up in the back of the plane and cut off, and they don't, like, let people get out.
Yeah.
And they get up as soon as the plane
starts. That's obnoxious.
That's a bigger ick. To me, whatever, a plane clapper, he has enthusiasm.
There's protocol.
I'm an enthusiastic person, so I can't fault someone for that.
Right. Exactly.
I'm surprised I don't clap in planes.
I don't every time, but I've definitely done it before.
I've done it if I felt like, ooh, that was a harrowing journey.
Thank you.
Well done. If I prayed in tongues at any point, I'm considering clapping. wearing sunglasses indoors.
No.
I think you're weird, but I'm not going to dump you for
maybe
it.
Maybe you're blind. Yikes.
It also feels like, are you doing like, it
why would you
to make a statement?
Is that, have you guys seen that? I watch Family Feud funniest moments all the time. Just when I
wait, are you talking about Steve Harvey?
Pork. Name a word that follows pork, and the kid guy goes, "You pie."
My favorite is when Steve literally walks away because he's laughing so hard he's crying.
No, but listen. Whatever. There was this question: is name something when you name something that. You show up to a blind date, name something that the person conveniently forgot to tell you, and the person buzzes it and goes that they're blind. And Steve Harvey just goes, oh, yeah, by the way, I actually am a blind date.
That's amazing. That's hilarious.
I watch a lot of these.
I literally have gotten on that side of TikTok, and oh my god, it is
like,
the most
I'll
pure.
Fall to those
it is the most pure like, form of entertainment. Oh my god, there's
YouTube
something so wholesome
like,
about how funny that is.
Oh my god.
Okay. Anyways, okay, I'm almost done here. Using emojis in text.
Wow. Why would you ever dump somebody for that?
That's so silly.
I think some of these are like maybe a guy would dump a girl for that. I don't think a girl would ever dump a guy for using emojis in texts.
I've seen a lot of videos about, you know, certain things.
I
being
love emojis.
Yeah, I mean, I use emojis. I don't care that some feel like
I
millennials.
Use them
I use them all the time. Mm-hmm. Wanting to share food on the first date.
I'm like, I have no qualms with sharing food or people asking. Sure. Oh, can I have a bite of that?
Sure.
I think
I don't even
only
think
if is if he reaches across without asking. To just eat my food off my plate, and we're on a first date. If we're dating, different story. But I'm saying, like, first date, no conversation, he comes over to.
Yeah, that's weird. I mean, it's
if
weird.
If he's still
I don't
fry,
know that I'd dump him
yeah,
for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't dump him for it, but I would be like, oh.
Excuse me.
I think I'd just be like, oh, you're just, like, a really comfortable person.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm comfortable now, too.
Yeah. I mean, there is a component where I don't mind sharing food, but, like, I don't want you to just steal it off
Joey
my plate.
Joey doesn't share food.
See, I'm not like that. And last but not least, saying pet names like Honey or Baby.
I don't have a problem with pet names in general. Sometimes the ones that people come up with are a little bit obnoxious, and you're like, how do you live like this? But
also, if it works for them.
Whatever floats your boat.
Yeah. I will say, though, if it's after the first date, too soon.
Right.
Even if you're trying to make a joke, it's too soon.
Sure.
I had one guy text me, hey, monkey, after a first date. And I think he was trying to be like Dwight from The Office, but still, hard pass.
Yuck.
Hard pass.
Yeah.
Anyways, so those are some icks. So
ick.
It was an ick. That was an ick for me, but it's because I was like, I don't know what you're doing, man. Like, and there was other icks too. That wasn't the,
yeah.
It to me, it's like if there's a compilation, red flags and icks, forget about it.
Yeah, sure.
Forget about it. Okay. I digress. That was a really fun hiatus and that was delightful. Okay. So.
The swoon scale.
The swoon scale.
The swoon scale.
Forgot about this for a second. Yeah, I did too. I'm ready.
Good thing I remembered. Okay, so.
I'm ready for it.
Listeners, we should tell you, in case this is your first episode that you've ever heard with us, we have a swoon scale that we talk about on, and I think this season we'll actually end up talking probably on every episode. Because last season there were some that, like, it was a thriller book and there was no romance. Like, we're not going to talk about swoon scale. But it is how swoony we think the characters, the romance, or relationship is on a scale of 0 to Colin Firth in a wet shirt from the 1995 Pride and Prejudice classic where he comes out of the water and sees Elizabeth with the wet shirt. That's our scale. So that's always on the table.
Yes.
One time. It's only ever been picked one time.
It's only been picked once.
For Morgan.
Yeah.
And last season for the Becky Wade book.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this category.
Gold standard.
Gold standard. I'm excited because I feel like maybe Madeline and I, this will be our season when we choose a book to be as swoony as Colin.
Maybe this will be our season.
We don't know.
I don't just get one. I can pick as many of those.
Oh, yeah. Of course. I just mean like you're the only one who's actually done that. Yeah. Okay.
Yes,
so,
yes. So this
swoon scale.
The category we picked for this book is colonial food dishes.
Yes.
Classic colonial food dishes.
Yes.
Correct. That's where we're going. If you know us, then this is on par.
Then that makes
sense. This is on par.
It all connects.
It all connects. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, go for it.
So, I did not find this book particularly swoony. I don't know why. We talked about it a little bit. Could have been Alexa's fault. Probably was Alexa's fault. So I had one picked out, but actually hearing you guys remind me of a couple of the scenes, I actually changed it to something different because I was like, oh, I think it was actually, I'm just forgetting that part. I think it was a bit swoonier than I gave it credit for. So my first pick was molasses cookies.
Okay.
And the reason I picked that is because I don't really like molasses at all. But some people really dig molasses.
It's true.
And I don't understand that. But it really works for some people and it doesn't for me. So the idea of a molasses cookie is like, no, thank you. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Yeah. Also, there was a heavy tax on it in the 1770s, so people had to sit. It was very popular before then, and they had to stop making it for a while. But then whenever the tax was lifted or brought down or something, they were like, thank goodness, bring it back in.
Have you ever had a molasses cookie before?
No, because I don't like molasses.
But you don't like
had molasses, and I'm like, why would you put this on things?
I feel like I've had a molasses cookie one time, and I don't know that I love molasses, but I did not mind the cookie. It tasted like a ginger snap of sorts to me.
See, exactly. Everything you even just said was, I didn't mind it. It tastes like a ginger snap of sorts. All of that's like, why waste the calories on that dessert, then, is the point that I'm trying to make.
There you go.
But instead, I'm not picking that. That was my original pick, but I changed it because I'm like, you know what? This book was maybe a little bit, I'd forgotten about the rain scene, actually. That's what did it for me. I'd forgotten about the rain scene, and that makes it more swoonier than a molasses cookie. So what I'm going for is a chunky apple cake.
Ooh.
Okay. And you hear that, and you're like, okay, well, what a weird name for a dessert. And I would agree. Chunky apples.
I don't mean that you don't want to have to chop them up?
I guess. I don't know. I didn't look deep into the recipe. I just looked at the names. Chunky apple cake. On first glance, I'm like, oh, I don't want to try apples. Bleh, boring. Like apples and dessert.
Nothing new. Been doing that for centuries.
Exactly. Literally. But then I'm like, okay, well, it's the only sweet thing here. I guess I'll have a bite. And I taste it. I'm like, hey, you know what? It's pretty good. Whoever made this was a good baker, and I appreciate that. Even though it's not my most favorite flavor palette, I appreciate what the baker did with this.
Mm.
That's great.
Chunky apple cake.
I love that.
Okay.
Chunky apple cake. Madeline, do you want to go next or do you want me to go next?
Sure. I will go next. Mine is actually a dish that was mentioned in this book.
Ooh.
But it's called syllabub.
Oh, yay.
What is that?
It is a popular drink dessert.
Oh. Like it's served at parties.
Yes. Combined sweetened whipped cream with wine or hard cider.
Mmm.
So there's one recipe, that was in the first cookbook to be published by like an American.
Hmm.
So it was like 1790s. It included a recipe for syllabub that called for, It's called to flavor the cider with sugar, grate nutmeg into it, and milk a cow directly into the liquor.
Wow.
The process.
Can you imagine putting that in a cookbook today?
Get your cup, milk your cow straight into that bourbon. Anyways, hilarious. But I picked Syllabub because it's a combination of like, it's alcohol and then like sweet cream, mm-hmm. right? So I picked that for this book because I feel like there's like this romance is not like a typical like fluffy, mm-hmm. Like there's a happily ever after, but like how it's like, oh, it's, their life's gonna be really hard. Their life's been really hard. But at the same time, there was these very like sweet, tender moments, mm-hmm. like sprinkled throughout. So I'm like, there it is, the perfect combination of like hard, difficult things, the alcohol, sweet moments, the whipped cream.
I love that. So I did not go a dessert direction. I went a completely different direction. I went for pickles.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that we already knew what you were gonna pick.
Okay. So my
detail.
So obviously, pickles in the colonial times were very popular because it's a very good way to preserve vegetables, even meat. They'd pickle beef, fish, etc. So, but for me, when I think of pickles, I think of cucumbers. Mm-hmm. And
me too.
The classic.
Try and true.
And I think one of the things I would say about pickles is I should first give a little caveat is I like pickles a whole lot. And pickles are one of, I'm just going to be a little candid here. So pickles are one of the only foods that when I go to open a jar, my mouth starts watering. That's how much I love dill pickles specifically. When I was a kid, you know how like your mom would like hide cookies? No, she would love to hide the pickle jar because I would literally sneak in there and eat the jar and then I would drink the pickle juice and she'd be like, stop it.
That's electrolytes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Stop. Anyways, and when I lived with my sister after I graduated from high school for a couple years, she like didn't, she hates the smell of pickles. And so like, she would not like, if I opened them in the day and she came home, she'd be like, did you eat pickles? So I would like eat them out on the balcony, even in the winter, because the smell was just too, just like eating a pickle. It wasn't like I was like, had a vat. I wasn't making pickles. I'm just like opening a jar and eating like a molasses pickle. Anywho, so the reason why I picked this is because I feel like the thing about pickles is they take time. And I think for this romance, I think that the swoony factor, like from the get-go, you're like, oh my God, this is going to be good. Like, I just knew it. Like, just the way that like they met and then you're like, there's complications and it takes time and like they're in different sides of the world and she's like figuring it out. And I do think one of the reasons why, and we didn't really get into this, but when Will asked her, well, why'd you decide to come with me to the farm or just to the plantation? And she was like, basically she said that she discovered like things about herself and realized like what she was kind of worthy of. And so I feel like there's a point when it's like this romance for me needed time to brine, if you will. But along the way, the hope of it, cause like, here's the thing, a jar of pickles in the fridge waiting to be pickled, I guess that'd be the process. There is something about that just like excites me, you know, like just, but you got to wait to the right time. Cause here's the thing. If you open them at the wrong time, not going to taste good. And it's just gonna be like a weird soggy cucumber that's salty, you know? Yeah. And so, I think that for me, it was like, cause even like the ending where she gets kidnapped and then they like find each other again, it was almost like you needed that, like both of them to choose each other yet again. Do you know what I'm saying? Cause there was factors to consider. And I think you summed it up really well that like, yes, their romance was sweet, but like, they're still going to live a hard life. They live in colonial world, like mm-hmm. the world. They don't know that, you know, in their lifetime, there's going to be the revolution or there's going to be all these things. I mean, they'll obviously be older, but I'm just saying like, they'll be in their like 40s, 50s, you know, anyways. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that was mine. Pickles.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love that. That's
great.
Absolutely. These were all really good. This was a delightful swoon scale. Okay, so highs and lows, anybody that we didn't discuss already?
Yeah. Highs and lows.
I think I kind of talked about mine.
Okay. Do you think about yours, Madeline?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have something?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say... a low for me. I understand why it happened, but I feel like the turmoil that Sylvie went through with losing her father, losing her grandmother, losing her mom, losing her sister, and then coming to the new world, that was just a lot to process. And so for me, I understand why the decision was made. This was a real thing that people went through. Like, this story is not, it's fiction, obviously, but it's based on, like, the kind of things that people went through. But for me, that was a low, and I really kind of wish there was not just a reunion with Blue, but I was hoping that she'd have a reunion with her father, maybe, or something. And so, like, and I understand why that didn't happen, because Blue did confirm at that point, because she wasn't sure, but she assumed that her father and had passed away, and her grandmother and stuff, because they all got separated. But I feel like for me, that was a low. I understood why. But even just, like, reading through that kind of section of the book, while it wasn't overly descriptive, it was descriptive enough that you felt kind of, I was just very sad about that. And I think a high for me was the sprinkle of romance throughout it, because there was this one scene where, and this kind of ties into my God factor, but I'll save that. He finds out that Sylvie is sick, and so he goes to the bookbinder and he's like, hey, can you give her this Bible? It's like a little Bible that he is, or a little notebook that he's written scripture in. And when she gets it, it literally has flowers from her hometown that he's pressed into the pages, and it has the 23rd Psalm. And it was just things like that throughout it that, like, and she, like, rehearsed this, and I feel like I'm diving into the God factor, but, like, she throughout the book, because she was, like, reading the passage, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, he makes me lie down in green pastures, like, well, that's not me. And then she literally, she gets the verse where it says, like, he prepares a table before me in the presence of my enemies, and then she thinks about how, like, there's been kindness and goodness, and I feel like it starts to ignite this hope in her. And so for me, that was, like, a high point when I was like, oh, there's, like, he's being kind and he likes her, but also this feels like a pivotal moment in her character development to also, like, open the book. And then it talks about her opening that and carrying it with her and treasuring it and keeping the flowers in the pages because they remind her of her home. So that was my high.
Oh yeah, I feel like there's just so many, as somebody who loves details, like, I just loved this book. There are so many details in this book. That's my high. Just all the little moments. Even just, like, her sewing the dress and bringing home, like, the little what was it called? What was the doll called?
Pompadour.
I kept wanting to say, I was about to say paramour. I was like, that's not it.
sewing the dress, bringing home her paramour.
sewing the dress and bringing home the little, like, the pompadour doll. And how, like, Marie Madeline was just, like, enamored of it. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the way she talked about, like, her sabots, like, her wooden shoes. Yeah. And all these just, like, details and that just immersed you in the story. And even later on, like, when they're at the plantation too, it's not just in the beginning, as she sprinkles them all throughout, but I just love that so much. And I think my low is that I didn't get more page time with Blue. So hopefully that gets remedied for me.
Even a little epilogue would have been a nice little taste there. Okay. God factor to round out this episode.
Yeah, I'll just keep going.
Yeah.
So I loved Sylvie's, like, journey in this book. I thought it was really well done. I think it's, like, something that a lot of people would relate to, because it's, like, it's a very real thing to have an injustice of any, it can take all forms, but injustice toward you, or things that just seem, like, so senselessly sad or senselessly evil happening around you, and it seems counterintuitive to hope in those situations. Because what it seems against our nature to hope when you're put in situations like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a super, everyone can relate to that. Mm-hmm. Everyone has an experience that encompasses some sort of something to that end, whether big or small or anything in between. And I think that the way that the very real questions that Sylvie asks about like questioning, like reading, like you were just talking about, like reading in the 23rd Psalm and saying, he hasn't, where are my green pastures? Mm-hmm. my soul is devastated and torn in pieces. It's not restored. Mm-hmm. And like being angry and denying things and not wanting to pray. And it's just so real. It's so mm-hmm. real and it's so relatable. And I just felt like that her journey was just so beautiful to read about. And I loved the scene where she was like inside Blackburn's home, like the big house mm-hmm. at the plantation. And like she went in, she was in his bedroom. He was not there. She was in his bedroom and like saw the Bible on his nightstand and like picked it up and was reading and like read the scripture about, you know, the Lord holding our tears in a bottle or mm-hmm. cherishing our tears, like holding them in a bottle. And how she had never read that verse. She had never encountered that passage of scripture. Why would she? Like, it wasn't normal for women to learn scripture. But like that was so sweet. Like she experienced that, mm-hmm. reading that and like understanding that. Like, this is scripture. Mm-hmm. I believe scripture is true. Mm-hmm. This must be true. And like mm-hmm. having that train of thought and like framing God in that new way that she had never framed him in before, and understanding him in a way that she had never understood him before. Mm-hmm. And it changed, like she had to change the way that she saw her mm-hmm. own circumstance because she understood God better now. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was so beautiful. Cool. And her story arc was just, mm-hmm. it was lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. Morgan, do you anything next?
You actually can, because my God factor was the same moment that you chose, so why don't you just finish, since you kind of started with what you were saying, finish it, and if I have something to add.
Oh, perfect. And I also realized I did highlight a high moment, so I'm going to tie this into my God factor.
Tag
then.
It but, in there.
I do think, kind of piggybacking off of what I was saying earlier, piggybacking off of myself.
How's that
is
work?
That the Psalms, so I feel like there is something that scripture, if you spend time and are intentional about reading it and meditating on it, I think that for me, I've seen it over and over again in my life. And I don't know that this was specifically tied to Sylvie's childhood, but thinking about how she got this notebook, the Psalms were in it, and throughout, like, once she read it, throughout, she would literally, like, remember the scripture. And I feel like the one thing that, for me, the God factor was, even if the thing that it's someone giving you it, or if you don't fully understand or can't comprehend, if you're meditating on scripture when you're in a dark season, when as you're coming out, or even in if it gets darker, because sometimes that's the reality of it. Like the one verse says, in the shadow of death, like even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, is that like there are times when like you're like, oh, this gets bad, and then it just gets worse. Like for her, it was like literally it was getting better. She was engaged to Will. She was finally like being happy. She was, you know, helping to mother these two children that she loved, and it was just so special. Yeah. And she gets kidnapped, you know. It's like you're just like, oh my God, like, you know. And so I feel like there's this point of the remembrance of scripture in your heart, and the remembrance of those verses come up. It's like out of the heart,
out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks.
Exactly. And so I think for something like this, it's kind of that process. Mm-hmm. And it was just really, because I feel like throughout it, I think there was like two or three times after she read the Psalms, and it was like her inner dialogue about reading the Psalms and like reaction, and then she would like think about it. And then like later on, she literally said, oh, this is another moment of like, he prepares a table before me in the presence of my enemies. And I just thought that was so powerful. So I don't know. Do you want to say something about that before I jump into my last kind of quote, because maybe that would be a good recap.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I kind of am in the same boat as all of you, and probably where I was going to go with it was a little bit more towards like what Madeline was saying, so like right in between. Yeah, but just great. Like the, like whenever I read that scene of her like reading the scriptures and doing the whole, oh, well, that's not me, that doesn't apply, mm-hmm. Where's God right now, basically, mm-hmm. just like that, right, the relatability of it, mm-hmm. how we've all been there, mm-hmm. but then also how she, there were moments where there was a, like a light bulb going mm-hmm. off, and yep. it's like, oh, actually, right, yeah, no, God is here, and mm-hmm. I can see it like this, and even though I don't feel like I always can, mm-hmm. that, even those light bulb moments, even if they're small, even if they're just little something, that those, I think, mm-hmm. are what keep you going in the dark times, because they're just reminders, mm-hmm. okay, well, you know what? And you always have to choose to believe, right? You choose to believe mm-hmm. or you choose to not believe.
Right.
But it's like, if I'm choosing to believe that this is true, mm-hmm. then I have to choose to believe it's all true.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. otherwise, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Oh, so, for sure.
Yes.
So that was just kind of what was resonating. So, yeah. Oh, right there with y'all.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so one quote to cap off this lovely episode.
Let's do it.
So this is talking about Will and Sylvie. It's 78% for those who are reading on the Kindle. So she's talking, like, this is when they're like at the plantation together, and they, like, he's been surveying and he's coming back, and so it says, he made her feel lovely, not wounded or unwanted, not scarred. And I feel like just there was something about the way that she wrote that, is because this was the thing that Sylvie was like, everything after everything that happened to me is, I don't deserve this. Like, I don't deserve, like, happiness. And she just kept questioning it. And the thing was, like, not scarred, you know, lovely. And I feel like it was like, that to me is what love feels like, versus like the romance, you know what I'm saying? Because it was like, I think you said it in the beginning, sweet and tender.
Yes.
And I feel like that sentence just kind of encapsulates that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, ladies, this was a really fun,
great fun adventure. Yes.
And yeah, listeners, we'd love to know if you know what 17
shillings and sixpence?
Yes.
That's the question of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you've ever heard Alexa read a book, we'd love to know your experience as well.
Did you know Alexa can read books? Don't ask her to
do it.
She can.
She can, and she has.
She can, but should she? Probably not. But what we should do is end this episode, and we'll see you next time for another book episode.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode.
Follow us on Instagram at Redeeming Lit Podcast, and be sure to subscribe on Apple or Spotify so you don't miss any episodes.
If you have any questions or book recommendations, email us at redeeminglitpodcast@gmail.com.
Until next time,
keep it lit!